We are going to work on our last functional group of the quarter, alkynes, today. So section one, you've already had a little bit about alkynes. Section two, we'll have a short discussion of alkynes in lab, although we'll talk much more about nomenclature, talking about specifying cis and trans and E and Z of double bonds. But here I want to talk entirely about alkynes. So alkynes do have somewhat similar reactivities to alkenes because, like alkenes, alkynes have pi bonds. And so there aren't really, except for the two that I'm going to show you today, there aren't really any more new reactions we're going to learn for alkynes. More we're going to be doing is seeing how the same reactions for alkenes are modified a bit for use with alkynes, and we'll see how the mechanisms of alkynes reacting are similar to alkenes with a few important differences. So let's start, in fact, with hydrogenation. Hydrogenation is to add hydrogen, which, as we had seen with alkenes, is a process that is metal-assisted. So in exactly the same way, we'll use the same reagents here, hydrogen with either platinum or palladium. The issue with alkynes, though, is that, yes, the pi bond of an alkyne will react and be hydrogenated in the same way as an alkene. But if you put one molecule of hydrogen on an alkyne, you're going to get an alkene, which we already know reacts with hydrogen and platinum or palladium. So in other words, the alkene that you would initially make, you wouldn't be able to isolate. It would react itself, and so you'd go from an alkyne all the way down to an alkane. So let's take a terminal alkyne, and I'll show hydrogen and platinum or palladium. Technically, I would show two equivalents of hydrogen, but a chemist would look at this and recognize, oh yeah, the triple bond, even if it formed a double bond, would continue to react. And you're going to go all the way down to, again, the alkane. So let me just write a little explanatory note here. Since the initial product of hydrogenation of an alkyne is an alkene, and given that alkenes are also hydrogenatable, the hydrogenation of an alkyne will produce an alkane. But wouldn't it be nice if there was some way that we could stop off at the alkene, where somehow it didn't continue to react? And it turns out that that is possible, and it's using what is known as a poisoned catalyst. Which is a catalyst that has been deactivated by the inclusion of additional reagents. So one of these well-known poison catalysts is referred to as Lindler's catalyst, which, for the level of this course, I'm not going to make you memorize what is in it, but it's generally some kind of lead salt, like lead sulfate, lead 2 sulfate, also including a nitrogen base in a compound like quinolin, which we'll see the structure of quinolin next quarter. More importantly, you just need to know that this compound, that this catalyst has been somewhat deactivated. And so it is reactive enough to react with alkynes, but the alkenes that would be produced, it ends up not being reactive enough with. So in other words, the alkyne is more reactive in the alkene in this kind of reaction. And by reducing the activity of that catalyst, you can actually stop the hydrogenation at the alkene. Now think about geometry though, because the alkyne is linear. And if we go to an alkene, well, we have the potential of forming either a cis or trans alkene. But since hydrogenation for an alkyne works the same way as an alkene, meaning that that hydrogen metal surface, sorry, the platinum or palladium metal surface, you're going to have hydrogen that's absorbed onto it. When the alkyne approaches, the two hydrogens are going to add from the same direction. So regardless of whether it ends up making the most thermodynamically favorable product, which it won't, because it's going to be, the two substituents are going to be pushed the same way, you're going to end up with syn addition, which is going to cause the formation of a cis double bond. So let me choose a different starting material that does have two different groups attached to the triple bond. The way I would write this is, again, using just hydrogen gas, and then I would say Lindlow's catalyst. And the product will be a cis double bond. But wouldn't it be great if there was some way to get a trans double bond? You know, if we have the ability to go all the way to an alkane or to a cis alkene, wouldn't it be nice to do a trans alkene? And it turns out there is a way that could be used. This is the only other radical mechanism that we're going to see this quarter. So it is one of the new reactions that we have to learn for alkynes, because this reaction only occurs with, the more reactive alkynes, does not happen with alkenes. And this you could call reductive hydrogenation. And it involves sodium metal dissolved in ammonia liquid. So ammonia itself is a gas, but if you cool it down enough, you can condense it. Dissolve sodium in it, apparently it turns into this nice, pretty blue solution. I never performed the reaction myself, but I heard it's kind of an interesting reaction to watch occur. The reason that it forms a blue color is because sodium is a reducing agent. And in ammonia, electrons from sodium are able to dissociate, you could say. So sodium is acting as it normally would as a reducing agent. What is it going to reduce? The alkyne. Because what ends up happening, since there's the electrons floating around solution, they end up going into the antibond of one of the pi bonds of the alkyne. So, sodium metal acts as a reducing agent. Providing electrons that can add into one of the pi bonds of an alkene. So, since this is a radical mechanism, we are going to be using the single arrows like we saw for free radical halogenation. And it's going to be a little bit odd the way we write it, because I'm going to show an electron as if it's an atom participating in a mechanism. Because think about what's going to happen. If we put an electron into an antibond, well, if we started out with a pi bond, which had already two bonding electrons, we're adding an antibonding electron, then you're going to end up making a half bond. because you'll have one of those antibonding electrons cancel out one of the bonding electrons. That's going to destabilize that bond, and it's going to end up breaking as a result. Well, if you had three electrons to begin with, two of them can go to one atom, and so that's going to end up being a lone pair, but you still have one more electron left over, which is therefore going to form a radical. So by adding an electron into this triple bond, we're going to form what's known as a radical anion. So here's the way to show that mechanistically. Triple bond splits. And again, the electron ends up paired with one of those electrons from the bond. Now, which way the electron goes is not going to matter overall in this reaction. So I've just arbitrarily shown it going to the atom on the right. So this is again called a radical anion. But yes, it's a radical, but let's focus on the fact we've made this anion. This is an anion that's on an sp2 hybridized carbon. As we learned previously in the quarter, this is much more basic than if we had made an anion on a triple bond. Not as basic as on an sp3 hybridized carbon, but still, this is very, very, very basic. Basic enough that it is able to deprotonate ammonia, which, if you think about that, that's kind of unusual, because ammonia is itself a base. But in this reaction, since the alkene anion, is so much more basic, it's forcing ammonium to act as an acid. The reaction is now halfway done, because we still have a radical, which, although I've drawn it in this way, let me point out that, well, in fact, let me ask, what is the hybridization of that atom? I heard two different answers, SP and SP2. I heard two different answers. Tastes great, less filling. No, it's SP. Why? Because there's only two sigma bonds there. So the double bond counts for two of the connections to carbon, the single bond, a third connection, and the radical is where a hydrogen could be, but something's not there yet. But that counts as the fourth valency, you could say, for that carbon. Since an individual electron does not have the repulsive force of a pair of electrons, it doesn't affect hybridization or geometry. For similar reasons, pi bonds don't affect hybridization or geometry. So again, because you only have two sigma bonds, it is SP, which means it's linear. But the next step of the reaction is that one more electron, which is floating around solution because sodium acts as a source of electrons, one more electron ends up adding in. But what will happen to the hybridization of that carbon once the electron does add in? It becomes sp2 hybridized, which means now it does matter which place I put the substituent on, because it's going to end up either cis or trans. Now, I've gone ahead and written it trans, but why does that make sense? Less steric hindrance. And so the radical was linear in geometry, but by adding the electron, it forces the alkyl group one way or the other. And again, on the basis of thermodynamics, it's going to force it to go trans. Now, that is another alkene anion, and so it is also really, or as I said in the past quarter, hella basic. So you're going to have another reaction
Do people still say Hella? I know that I'm getting old that I have to ask, but at least I'm trying, right? One of the most trying people you might know. Anyways. We end up with a trans double bond, the whole point of this reaction. So again, the key part of this reaction is exactly because we play this hybridization trick, where there's an intermediate that's linear, but then once it becomes an anion, it forces the geometry. Yes?
Why don't we just put the metal up and below, so go through the alkyne to make it trans?
What are you saying, I'm sorry?
The first one, the hydrogenation.
Uh-huh.
Why don't we just, like, the plate, we put it below and above the solution. So,
But the hydrogen, when it dissociates, would still go to one face. I think what you're saying is if we devise some machine where the pieces of, we had two pieces of metal, that somehow an alkyne happened to get right in between that, that would be molecular engineering. I can't say that it's totally impossible, but extraordinarily unlikely. Questions about these three different hydrogenation reactions then? Okay, then let's go reverse order, I think, for difficulty of reactions. So let's deal with hydroboration oxidation. So let's say that we had another terminal alkyne that reacted with borane and THF. Let's say that I examine the intermediate that we get immediately after the first addition occurs. Because remember that borane ends up having three reactions because each of the hydrogens in borane is reactive. Now, borane addition is syn addition, correct? Why? The hydrogen and boron add on the same side because it goes through that four-center transition state. So because you can't have four atoms that have an anti-orientation all at the same time and bonds forming or breaking between them all at the same time, it has to be a syn addition. Realize that will coincidentally give us a trans product in this case. But this is if only one hydrogen reacts. Couldn't the other two hydrogens of this boron react as well? Couldn't the alkene react with another molecule of borane? Well, both are going to happen. Which if you do, that's going to end up forming a cross-linked structure where you have all these carbon-boron bonds that are connected one to the next to the next to the next to the next. A big, huge mess is what you'd make, in other words. So hydroboration is possible, but we have to be a little bit sneaky about it. So let me comment on why, as written, this reaction isn't going to go so well. So the alkene could react with another molecule of borane, and the other hydrogens on boron can react, which results in a big mess. That'll be our technical term for it. Just like squishy. So what do we do instead? We use the modified reagent, which I know there's some acronym or abbreviation for this. I'm blanking on it at the moment, so we'll just worry about what the structure is, which I'll write that structure in kind of an unusual way because it helps in memorizing what the structure is. So if you imagine writing the Greek letter pi, a big Greek letter pi, put parentheses around it, cut one side of the pi with the parentheses. What you've just made is a 1,2-dimethylpropyl substituent. Put a 2 around the parentheses and add BH to the end. So what this represents is the following. Which, what is the point of this molecule? Well, 2. There's only one reactable hydrogen on each boron. And so you don't have to worry about one way in which this network mess can form. But you also have these alkyl groups around the boron. So even once the boron adds on, another of this same kind of molecule would not want to add because of the steric factor involved. So this produces only one intermediate, which then can be decomposed to make the desired product. So let me comment on this first. The bulky alkyl substituents prevent multiple additions to the alkyne, and only one reactable hydrogen is present per molecule. So, let me show the mechanism, just for this one step. So boron is the electrophile. It's going to be added to the less substituted position. Hydrogen, since it's effectively the nucleophile in this case, adds to the less, more substituted position. We have that simultaneous attack on the of the alkyne on the boron, and then the hydrogen coming back to the alkyne. And again, it occurs with syn addition. This time, I'll just abbreviate the structure, which you can free to use this kind of funky pi abbreviation your own self. It's not a pi. It's just the way to remember what the connectivity of the alkyl groups. Yes. Now, what happens next? Well, we react it with hydrogen peroxide and sodium hydroxide. So the same kind of decomposition that we've done previously. Which maybe you all might not mind if I show that, just so we have some practice writing this mechanism.
Okay.
Given that, you know, maybe there's another place where this mechanism might still show up this quarter, given that you have a final exam, and we haven't talked about alkynes yet. Big fat hint, is it pretty clear enough? No. Problem number 4 or something like that on the final. Don't ask her, it'll get tougher. But realize that this is an easier molecule to show the borane mechanism on because you only do have one addition to the alkyne and there is only one reactable hydrogen on the boron. So you don't have to show multiple reactions occurring over and over and over again. So first, hydrogen peroxide adds into the boron. It's going to make the boron negatively charged.
Remember, the toughest thing about this mechanism, or the oddest thing about this mechanism, is the unusual alkyl shift that occurs. Now, all three of these alkyl groups will eventually react, so there'll be a byproduct that you have to isolate from the reaction as well. But you'll see in a moment why that's going to end up being pretty easy to do. So I'll, because it's convenient, show the shift occurring with the alkene, what we want to end up with as the product. Once that occurs, we end up with this alkoxy borane. That then can get attacked by hydroxide. Again, making a negatively charged boron. Which then, the negative charge can be relieved by the alkoxide leaving. Which, although in the text apparently it shows hydroxide being the reagent that does the following, you're going to have a mixture of alkoxides and hydroxides in solution. So you can't pin it down and say exactly which species is it that's going to do this deprotonation. Since it's convenient to do it and it shows sort of what happens, I'm just going to show the alkoxide deprotonating this borane, or boric acid, I think, derivative is what those would be called. And so we end up with our final product. Until it decomposes. Oh, because we have made something known as an enol. Which, as the name sounds, it's composed of both an alkene and an alcohol, which... Get ready for this one. No. See, there's this other molecule that was discovered by a researcher named MacDonald, and I just wanted to write it up to see if you could rationalize why it's called that. And if you already know why, then be quiet and let everybody else groan in an exasperation. Because here is that molecule. But what kind of molecule is that?
Organic molecule?
Well, yes, it is. But what kind of functional groups do we have? We have alkenes, and we have alkynes, and then a ketone, right? And old MacDonald had this molecule, an enine-enine-one. Which, if you didn't grow up in the U.S., you might not be laughing right now, because there's this children's song, Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and on this farm, now you're getting it, okay. Little cultural reference there, you know. A little extra education going on. That went over a little better than Mercedes-Benzine, didn't it? Anyways, this enol is thermodynamically unstable. In general, vinyl alcohols and amines are unstable. And there's this process that they go through where it's going to look like they're making a resonance structure, but I got to emphasize strongly it is not resonance. It is a set of chemical reactions. But it does form a set of what I would call functional isomers. And this process that I'm referring to is known as tautomerization. So let me state under that. Tautomers are structural isomers. Related by the interchange of a single and double bond. This specific kind that we're going to see is known as a ketoenol tautomerization. Where you could have a vinyl alcohol that ends up going back and forth to a ketone. So this is the ketoenol tautomerization. Out of these two products, it turns out that the ketone is far, far more thermodynamically favorable, which allow me to move to another page so I have some more room, but I'll show you. Actually, I'll show you the mechanism first, and then we'll compare the starting material with the end product to see what has changed. There are two mechanisms for tautomerization, both of which we'll use next quarter, only one of which we'll learn this quarter, the one that is appropriate for this reaction, because this reaction occurred in basic conditions. So there's a basic tautomerization and an acid tautomerization. So, hydroxide can deprotonate this alcohol. Why? Well, alcohols have roughly the same pKa values as water. So that means hydroxide is roughly the same basicity level as alkoxides. Turns out, in solution at least, that hydroxide is a little bit less basic than an alkoxide. So normally this reaction wouldn't be terribly favorable. But aside from inductive effects, and then the hybridization effect that I talked about earlier when we were talking about alkene anions being basic, what other effect can change the acidity of a compound? Resonance, right? Do we have resonance possible at this point? Yes, we certainly do. Because the alcohol could attack the alkene and push the alkene open. You might normally say, wait, that alkene, or sorry, that's not even alkene, that's an alkane. That anion, you could argue, should be really, 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 really basic and really, really unfavorable. Well, yeah, but use the same argument in reverse. That anion is still in resonance. So whether we show the oxygen with the negative charge or the carbon at the negative charge, they're the same molecule. They are just resonance structures from each other. So whether you view the oxygen being deprotonated or whether you view the carbon being deprotonated, the same argument applies. But what could happen once you do show this resonance structure formally is we can imagine water being attacked. Which brings up a huge point. That we know that there's a hydrogen that's going to get added to this anion. But you can't write H plus, like I normally have been doing this quarter, to show a random source of hydrogen. And that's because in all these electrophilic additions in which I do just write a nondescript H plus, those are all cationic reactions, and they're usually involving acids. And so H plus exists in acid solution. Think of simple electrophilic addition, HBr. That's an acid. Think of hydration, adding a water to an alkene. There you use something like tosic acid, again an acid source. But here, this is occurring in hydrogen peroxide and sodium hydroxide. You can't suddenly just switch and say, okay, magically an acid comes from somewhere. No, instead you have to use water as your source of hydrogen. Why is it reasonable to say that water's there? Well, because you had hydroxide. At some point, hydroxide will deprotonate something in this mechanism, so you end up with some water, and that will be the source of the quench here, the source of H+. This will be the only place this quarter that we see this, but this is a recurring small error that's made in mechanisms throughout Chem 12B. So getting you ready for 12B, watch out for this kind of situation. What's our end product? Well, what is our end product? What functional group is that? It's an aldehyde. So the reason back for the keto-enol tautomerization I switched example molecules is because the product in that case was a ketone. The exact same mechanism is what occurs in this case that I just showed you, except that we happen to produce an aldehyde. Aldehydes and ketones, for the most part, undergo identical reactions. But as we'll learn next quarter, aldehydes tend to be more reactive than ketones. But now let's look at what had changed overall in this process. Because we started with a carbon-oxygen single bond that's broken. We start with a carbon-carbon double bond that's broken. In its place, we end up with a carbon-carbon single bond. And it's not written here, but we end up with a carbon-hydrogen single bond, in addition to the fact that the carbon-oxygen bond used to be single, but it's now double. So we have a total of 6 bond changes, you could say. And if you calculate the energy of breaking the double bond, adding the hydrogen, forming the carbonyl, getting rid of the hydrogen and oxygen, put all that together, the overall process is very exothermic. And the reaction happens easily enough, because it just involves an H moving around, really, that even in a trace of acid or base, this tautomerization will occur. So anytime you end up with a vinyl alcohol or amine, you just presume it will decompose. We'll learn some exceptions next quarter. But since alcohol chemistry is a topic for next quarter, this is as much of it as I'm going to present. So let me just make this last statement about thermodynamics. Overall, the conversion of an enol to a ketone or aldehyde is exothermic. And so if we had, just to summarize, an alkyne that reacted first with this substituted borane, followed by sodium hydroxide and hydrogen peroxide, for terminal alkyne, that ends you up with an aldehyde. If you have a symmetric alkene, then hydroboration is useful. And in that case, a symmetric internal alkyne, you'll end up with a ketone. The reaction will work even if it's not a symmetric alkyne, but realize that the carbonyl would have pretty much equal probability of adding or forming at one carbon versus the other. So if you have a symmetric molecule like this, it doesn't matter which carbon that occurs at, you'd get the same product. If you had two different substituents on the alkyne, well, then you would end up with two different ketones. Now, going back to the fact that we do end up with byproducts, because we do have these alkyl groups on the boron to create the steric bulk. Those end up producing alcohols, which tend to have much higher boiling points for the equivalent number of carbons compared to a ketone or an aldehyde. So you could easily separate out the product ketone or aldehyde from that alcohol by distillation or chromatography or some other technique. Questions? All right, so that was one of the tougher reactions to cover. Most of the rest of the alkyne reactions are simpler. Now, does anyone have their text with them? Because I know which reaction I want to show next, but each textbook shows a different set of reagents, and to be honest, I didn't check which sets in your text. Wow, these are convenient, these tear-apart ones, aren't they? So I just want to point out, okay, they do show it that way. Actually, we do need to go ahead and learn the acid version of tautomerization, because the next reaction I wanted to show is hydration. So you might remember that for an alkene, if we react it with H plus and water, you end up with an alcohol, Markovnikov addition. The same thing is true for alkynes, except for one key point, which I'll have to make this the thing I study tonight, which is that H plus, for whatever reason, is not a good enough electrophile for an alkyne versus an alkene, which is curious because the hydrogenation reaction we just talked about at the beginning, the alkyne is the more reactive molecule compared to the alkene, which is how we're able to do selective hydrogenation. So why there's this reverse in reactivity, I'm going to have to go find out. But at least I can explain what does happen mechanistically. But let me just write down that plain H plus in water does not occur rapidly. Because you need a stronger electrophile. And so what's used is generally some kind of mercury salt. Now, it's not oxymercuration demercuration the same way as we learned, although it does have a similar intermediate, where we can take that terminal alkyne, or internal even would work. We do react it with acid, water, and then we can use mercury 2 sulfate as a salt. That mercury 2 ion ends up forming the same kind of cyclomercurinium ion as we saw with oxymercuration demercuration. Similarly, it's going to be the more substituted position that prefers to be attacked next because that's the weaker of the two bonds. And since water is around, it's going to be water that ends up attacking. Oh, and since we don't have acetate, please make this change. It's actually still plus 2 after it reacts first, and still plus in this intermediate. But notice that we've made a enol. So now, let me show you acid-catalyzed tautomerization. So the first thing that happens is the alkene reacts with an H+. There is acid in solution, so that reaction's possible. The hydrogen, as it normally would do anyways, is going to go to the less substituted position. It's really going to occur that way because that forms a carbocation at the oxygen, with which it can then undergo resonance. Once that resonance occurs, oops, we'll form a carbonyl, but it'll be protonated, and so there is a last deprotonation step. Oh gosh, I keep writing double bonds. So we've made the ketone, which now reacts with water, and at the same time, the mercury comes back off again. When that occurs, you remake the enol, which reacts again, tautomerizes, to make the ketone. So unfortunately, I know that we're out of time. I've slipped this right at the end, so we'll pick back up with this reaction and the other reaction of alkynes on Friday.